Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 689, Interview with Sterling and Peggy Seagraves. This program is being recorded on September 13th of the year 2009. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Sterling Seagraves, who, along with his wife Peggy, who will also be joining us as the author of the consummately important book Gold Warriors, in my opinion, one of the most important books ever written, and also I would recommend for people who are going to read the book, pick up the preceding volume by these same two authors called The Amato Dynasty. Once again, Peggy and Sterling Seagraves, welcome back to our airwaves. And Peggy, this will be the first time in this interview that the audience has heard your voice. So again, welcome back to our airwaves.
Well, thank you very much, Dave, and thank you for the very generous introduction. I wanted to clarify something that people might be confused about. And that would be why Santa Romano, a Filipino, was working with Opus Dei, a Vatican secret service. This, in part, is pretty easy to explain, because after Japan took over Korea, first invading and then, accessioning the nation, the next move was in the early 1930s when the Kwantung Army, the North Army, the most aggressive of the forces, the most super conservative, the ones who were going to recapture Japan's legendary ambition of the conquest of China, with the strong support of Mitsubishi Industries, set up a separate empire in China called Manchukuo, and they put on the throne the Emperor Puyi, who was the last Qing Emperor of China, who had been deposed in the Chinese Revolution of 1912. Now, what makes this particularly relevant is that at that time in the early 1930s, when the Empire of Manchukuo and the Emperor Puyi were publicly declared by the Japanese, it was denounced by the League of Nations, and the only country in the world that recognized the legitimacy of Puyi and the Empire of Manchukuo was the Vatican.
Which we should note is, from the standpoint of international law, a separate, a sovereign nation, and its order, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, have their own passports. Go ahead, Peggy.
Yes. It was clearly stated at the time that the Vatican represented a separate state, which had been established under agreements with Mussolini.
Yep, absolutely.
Over the last 10 or 12 years, while Mussolini was parading up and down the boot of Italy. And this helps to explain why a Filipino linked to Catholic secret services would have had links to the Kwantung Army, the Mitsubishi interests, and a lot of the loot that was subsequently moved out of Southeast Asia by the Japanese army ended up in the hands of the Kwantung Army. Not to forget also the very important economic glue of the Mitsubishi Empire.
Right.
Okay.
Mitsubishi, by the way, one of the so-called zaibatsu.
You betcha.
For one of the things, why don't we explain what the zaibatsu were? Because you really can't understand Japan pre-war, during war, or after.
Just think of it as like General Motors. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
They absorbed company after company after company.
Peggy, I'd like to just enumerate some of the zaibatsu and then get back to the discussion of the M Fund, the LDP, and so forth.
Okay.
In addition to Mitsubishi, the Yasuda, Sumitomo, Mitsui are some of the other zaibatsu, the giant Japanese family trusts, and institutions whose names are recognizable to the audience and have dominated much of the Japanese and global economy in the post-war period.
Yes, absolutely.
So these are not peripheral considerations.
No. These exist today. It's like the existence of the Thyssen Empire in Germany.
Precisely, and at the core, and inextricably linked with these dynamics that we're talking about. Peggy, were there some other points to what Sterling made in side one that you wanted to develop? Because I'd like to...
Yes, just one really... Okay. Secondly, regarding Nazi gold.
Right.
Okay. Swiss banks were forced about 10 years ago to repay victims of the Holocaust over secret accounts that the Nazis had taken over. At the same time, Japan during World War II moved huge amounts of gold through the neutral colony of Macau, just next door to Hong Kong, which was a Portuguese colony. Switzerland was neutral. Portugal was neutral. The Japanese gold, looted gold, went into Macau and subsequently worked its way to Switzerland. This subject has never been addressed. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And even now, in the news, there are, of course, all these reports of the U.S. government suddenly coming down on Swiss banks over non-declared American private bank accounts in Swiss banks, but there are no penalties.
There are a lot of secrets hidden in those vaults, and you and Sterling discuss at considerable length just how dark some of those secrets are, and what happens to people who wind up accidentally venturing into that
darkness.
Yes,
you don't want to do that.
Nope.
Finally, one further point would be regarding Pudama.
Right.
And his relations with the CIA and the whole propaganda machine that was financed by black funds. Pudama's biography, from which we quote from time to time in the book, the English language version called I Was Defeated was a CIA financed publication.
And basically, you identify Kodama not only as the fellow who pretty much concretized the Japanese and mainland Chinese underworld under Japanese occupation, but also the CIA's man in Japan, period.
Oh, yes, and he remains so through the Lockheed scandal of the mid-1970s, he was the black man.
He was a major player, and he was also, not incidentally, a Japanese war criminal from World War II.
Exactly, who completely was exonerated, not among the least of the people responsible, was the Judge Keenan, who had his own slush fund in his own name.
Mm-hmm.
The Keenan Fund.
Indeed. Any other points you wanted to make that were apposite
no,
to what Sterling...
No, I think I've covered it, Dave.
All right, because one of the things that, and I'm maybe jumping the gun a tiny bit here, I do want to develop further Richard Nixon, the M Fund, the Okinawa transfer, but obviously in this country and around the world, we've been experiencing economic shockwaves after the economic collapse of last fall, just about exactly a year ago. Paul Krugman of the New York Times, among other major economists, has cited what the perils that awaited the U.S. and compared that with potentially at least Japan's lost decade. And one of the things that you and Sterling have done in Gold Warriors is to chronicle the institutional and economic inertia that has afflicted Japan and that led to a series of LDP governments that basically were managing the M Fund, which became a source of irresistible corruption. And correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it seems to me in many ways it was that corruption and that inertia that launched or precipitated Japan's lost decade.
Well, first of all, correct me, but Krugman is an economist, yes?
He is a Nobel Prize-winning economist, a professor...
Well, I think he's missed the point, that it hasn't been a lost decade. It's been a lost... How many years are we since the end of World War II?
The better part of a century, and a 70, actually. Well, it was 70
okay.
in the beginning, but
it's
roughly...
Not, it's not a lost decade. It's seven lost decades,
mm-hmm.
to correct Mr. Krugman.
Well, that obviously, that indicates that what he's talking about is, at a superficial level, is derivative of the decades-long concatenation that you and Sterling have chronicled. Sterling, welcome back. It was delightful talking with Peggy again. And we were talking in side one about Richard Nixon, the M Fund in Okinawa, and I'd like you to recount that quid pro quo, and then let's talk about the lost decade. Let's talk about the M Fund, Mr. Tanaka, and how this really dominated post-war Japan.
Well, you know, Chicky Dick was a very, very close friend of the mafia. The place where he lived in Southern California, place where he lived in Florida, were both owned by Meyer Lansky. And Meyer Lansky loaned Nixon millions and millions of dollars. But Meyer Lansky is small fry compared to some of the Asian gangsters who dealt with the Song dynasty and essentially financed American politicians to get them into place so they could, make things work. The problem with Nixon was that Nixon simply had no way of getting to be president without a great deal of money. And he went to Meyer Lansky for some of it. He went to Yoshio Kodama for some of it. And eventually, through Kodama, he worked out this deal for the island, Okinawa. And that's worth a lot of money.
Indeed. So basically, there was a quid pro quo that was set up. The M Fund was turned over to Japanese control. And in exchange, the Japanese were to help Richard Nixon with his 1960 election campaign.
Exactly.
And the Japanese ultimately got Okinawa back in the early 1970s.
And not only Okinawa, but they got a great deal of money that they could spend in construction, so that the people in Japan now say half the country is covered with concrete.
And you talk about Mr. Tanaka and a whole series of interconnected LDP politicians, underworld figures, industrialists, and financiers. I wonder if you could chronicle that. Do you think it would be accurate to call that an oligarchy in post-war Japan?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Japan is not a democracy. It's an oligarchy. And for that matter, the U.S. is too. One of the things that is terrible to recognize about the world is that the world is run largely by gangsters. If they're not gangsters, they're banksters.
In terms of Japanese history, the LDP, as you chronicle, to an extent in Yamato Dynasty, to an even greater extent in Gold Warriors, the LDP, which dominated post-war Japan and was just recently unseated from an electoral standpoint, was basically a repository of the political and economic interests that launched Japan's wave of conquest in World War II. It wasn't they weren't turned out. There was no reform. They took off the uniforms and went right back to business with all of this stolen wealth as their engine.
That's the wonderful thing about it, is that the CIA and the U.S. government and the State Department helped these guys who had started the war get back into government after the war. And, it's a shock. It's a shock to think that your government is doing things like this. But the fact is, your government is doing things like this.
It's why I do these interviews, and it's why I do what I do to highlight work like Gold Warriors, because people need to know if they're ever going to do anything right, if anything's ever going to work out properly, people have to have the truth. And you guys have done an awful lot to bring that forward. Vis-a-vis Japan, too. Now, we've talked about the M Fund. We've talked about the LDP and the inertia, political and economic, which have stretched right from the World War II and even pre-World War II period right through the present. Covert operations, one of the things that you talk about, and we're going to go back to Mr. Santaromana now, you talk about how much of this gold that was looted served as a foundation for post-war and Cold War covert operations. Develop that for us a little further, if you would, Sterling.
Well, of course, most of the money that Santaromana moved was moved to Europe and moved to Central America, where there are an awful lot of banks that are linked with the Bank of Rome, the Vatican Bank. And so you've got Vatican banks in Puerto Rico, you've got Vatican banks in Panama, you've got Vatican banks all over the Western Hemisphere. And he was essentially an agent of Opus Dei. And Opus Dei does lots of wonderful things for Spanish people, but it also has a sinister side. And at the risk of getting myself murdered, since we live so close to the border, they are not nice people when they want to be not nice.
Oh, and by the way, I should butt in here just ever so briefly, Sterling. Opus Dei is a subject I've covered for, well, over the decades, and it really, I think, could be fairly described as fascist. It was inextricably linked with Francisco Franco's regime, and the current Pope and his predecessor, JP II, are very closely connected to Opus Dei.
Well, these guys wouldn't hesitate to bop over the border and bump the two of us off. Partly because there's been an old animosity between the French and the Spanish, in the sense that the Spanish are affiliated with Opus Dei and other Vatican organizations, whereas the French like to think of themselves as being loose-jointed and liberal and what have you. So living close to the border is a little bit dangerous.
And Opus Dei, again, being part of the glue that cemented Santaromana and this Japanese war gold with the world of covert operations. By the way, the Vatican Bank is also a subject we've covered at great length over the decades here. The Institute for Religious Works, the IOR. And you talk about the Vatican Bank in Gold Warriors at considerable length. Sterling, one of the things you talk about in the book is the Marcos gold and attempts at the very successful recoveries by Marcos, by the Japanese. The Reagan administration ran the United States into debt, but one of the things they were planning on doing was utilizing some of that war gold. Can you tell us about that?
What they were hoping to do was to get Marcos to give them enough of the hard gold, the gold bricks that he had hidden away in various stashes. He's got 7 stashes, I've learned since then, where there is an enormous amount of value, and this would be the perfect thing to back a new American currency. The old American currency, having been destroyed by the Fed and the Treasury and so forth, Reagan wanted to do was to give Marcos U.S. bonds in exchange for solid gold, and Marcos told him to get lost, and that's why Reagan told the CIA to get rid of Marcos, which they did.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, a side note, I've noted for the audience that Benigno Aquino, who was murdered by Marcos, was actually a CIA agent and a protege of Lansdale. Then when his widow, Corazon Aquino, took over during the People Power, quote-unquote, Velvet Revolution, was actually a CIA covert operation run by William Casey to get rid of Marcos, the person she had as her vice president was the son of the Japanese, the head of the Japanese occupation government in World War II. I suspect we're looking at some of that very institutional continuity that we've been talking
and
about.
And now I think Benigno's son is getting ready to run for election, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if he got snuffed.
Ain't democracy great?
Democracy is a wonderful thing to talk about.
But
it's a hell of a thing to make perform.
Indeed. One of the things that I'd like to highlight here, because we're running short on time, but you and Peggy have written about what happens when, not necessarily ordinary citizens, but when honored professional people, people like Norbert Schley, people like Cotton Jones, or even the heirs of Mr. Santa Romana, try to recover what is rightfully theirs, or in the case of Norbert Schley, what was rightfully the property of a client. And I think a lot of people think that, well, when it comes to finance, when it comes to big business, the bottom line is the bottom line, and your assets are secure, the institutions behave with integrity. And yet you have presented a frightening look at just what happens when individuals or even institutions decide to cross some of these incredibly powerful engines of covert finance and politics, dating back to and inextricably linked with the Second World War.
Well, essentially, let's talk about Citibank.
Sure.
Okay. Now, they may come and zap me tomorrow, but the fact is that Santa Romana had $50 billion in gold bricks, in Citibank in New York. We established this by going up to Albany, mm-hmm. and we found that he had those accounts in that bank. So he and his friends and a variety of attorneys went down to see the Citibank chief honchos, and they continued to deny that they had the gold bricks in the bank until the proof was presented to them, at which point, in order to avoid a lawsuit, in order to avoid losing a lawsuit, they moved the gold bricks, I don't know how, without permission from the U.S. government, down to City Trust in Nassau, in the Bahamas. And now we see Citibank begging for money, and, you know, gosh, we're going to go bankrupt any minute. Well, they're not going to go bankrupt. They've got so much money hidden away. It's incredible.
You also talk about another major institution which specifically has been a focal point of the Obama administration's pressure to get American tax cheats accounts shed light on those accounts for accounting and taxation purpose, and that is the Union Bank of Switzerland. Tell us about UBS.
Oh, my God. Now you're going to put me on the line because I'm only a few miles away. Well, USB has got every evasive technique that you know of. And everything they say you can be absolutely certain has been contrived. They have so much money. They hold the entire resources of the Saudi family. They also hold the entire resources in platinum of the former dictator of Indonesia, Sukarno.
Mm-hmm.
Sukarno was given that all that platinum by the Japanese in return for giving them access to the Dutch, the former Dutch oil fields in Sumatra. That money is, that platinum is sitting in USB, and the Saudi imperial, the royal family decided they wanted a piece of it, and they told USB and I have this from God's word, that if they didn't give them Sukarno's platinum, that they would take all of their gold out of USB, and USB told them to get stuffed.
Sterling, we're low on time here. If I could ask you to maybe give something of an encapsulated account, there's a lot of detail, but what happened to people like Cotton Jones and Norbert Schley when they crossed these engines of power?
Okay, Norbert Schley was Robert Kennedy's assistant attorney general, and he was a marvelous guy. He is, we know him, we knew him before he died, and we were greatly impressed by him. He tried to do the job that a good lawyer would do for his clients. He was told about the M Fund and Tanaka and the other former prime ministers in Japan who were, shading their money here and there and everywhere. And when he got into this, he got himself into incredible trouble with the CIA. CIA selected a judge in Florida, in Tampa, who would go after him. And she agreed to go after him. And, of course, he was immediately debarred. But he fought back. Good man. He came here to our house. We spent a lot of time talking with him. Know lots of his family. And in the end, he fought back to the point where, in his appeal, he won. And he was rebarred. He was allowed to go back to work. And then somebody killed him. Now, I'm asserting that because I believe that's true. He was jogging on the beach in Santa Monica, pair of bathing suits, and something hit him in the leg like a bee sting, and the next minute he was dead. Now, I know so many people who have had that happen to them. I don't believe the guy just died of a heart attack. The similar things have happened to everybody else who's been connected with these secret slush funds. But of all of them, I would say the one I admired most was Schley. He was a good man. He wasn't doing this to get money for himself. He was doing this to recuperate money that his clients were, had thought they'd paid good money for and should have back.
And exactly, he was working for one of his clients. Norbert Schley, by the way, was the author of the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Great man.
Man. Very quickly, the website where people can get the book and the now three data CDs.
Okay, the book is available at Amazon UK and Amazon in Germany in paperback, which is the best edition. Or it's available from us at our website, www.bowstring.net.
The book is Gold Warriors. The authors are Peggy and Sterling Seagraves, both of whom have graced our airwaves over the last hour. If you want to further if you want to enhance your understanding, and I encourage you to do that, get the book. Get the data CDs. It's literally the least you can do under the circumstances. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 689, interview with Sterling and Peggy Seagraves. This is being recorded on September 13th of the year 2009. For Sterling and Peggy Seagraves, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.